Good morning. Today's daf in Yuma Mem Zayin. We have the schutz this morning of starting the fifth parak of the Masechta. As I pointed out yesterday, we're at the midpoint of the Masechta, eight parakim in Yuma. And so we just transitioned from the fourth to the fifth parak. Obviously the Masechta is broken up into parakim, but the narration over here is really the same. We're going through the Seder of Yom Kippur. We're starting at the beginning of the Seder, and we're going to the end. Actually, the truth of the matter is, the Masechta started even before that. A week of preparation, which the first parak detailed in terms of the Kohen Gadol having the Hachana, the 7 days where he's going to be sequestered in the Beit HaMikdash, preparing himself for the Avodas Yom Kippurim. And then from that point going forward, through the second through fourth Prakim, so we started detailing and outlining exactly in chronological and sequential order what exactly is going to be the Avodas Yom Kippurim. We are ready to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. When I say we are, that's the royal we, because obviously it's the Kohen Gadol, and it's only the Kohen Gadol that's going to be going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the Kaf HaMachta, with the Kaf and the Machta, and that's what we're going to be outlining right now up to this point in time. So the Kohen Gadol has already done vidui on his par once. He has selected the Seirim, which is going to be Lashem and which is going to be Lazazel. He went back to his par to do a second vidui on the par. The second vidui on the par is going to be for all the Kohanim. And now he shechs the par that he did vidui on twice. And so the blood is going to go into a bowl. He himself is going to be doing the Kabbalah Saddam. He collected the blood of the bowl. Someone there in there is going to mix the blood to make sure it doesn't congeal. And now he's ready to take the blood to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But, as we have already pointed out, he can't go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the Dam. The Kodesh HaKadoshim needs preparation. How do you prep the room of the Kodesh HaKadoshim? So what the Kohen Gadol is going to do is he's going to bring in a shovel full of glowing hot coals. He's going to be bringing in a Meloch Chafnav, two handfuls of Ketores, cupped hands of Ketores, and then what he's going to do is he's going to put the shovel on the floor, put the Ketores on top of the glowing hot coals. It's going to produce the billow of smoke, which, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, is going to go straight up, hit the roof, and descend back over the wall. So basically, he's now going to create that cloud of smoke, which now is going to allow him to gain entrance into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the Dam of the Par. Okay, that's in a nutshell, basically a quick summary of everything we've been up to until now. And when I say quick summary, that's really quick. Obviously, that was 46 blot of Gemara. But as we begin today's Daf, Mem Zayin, we continue now, and we're at the point where he's getting ready with his shovel and with his spoon in order to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the Ketores and with the shovel full of coal. Hotziu lo. So they take out for him, meaning now they're getting the Kalim ready. So they go into the Lishkas HaKalim, right? Momentarily we discussed where the Lishkas HaKalim is. We're not completely sure, but somebody goes into the Lishkas HaKalim and takes out for him as the Kafas HaMachta. They take out the spoon and they take out the shovel. Now, as far as spoon is concerned, so I'm sure it's not the best translation. It's a lot bigger than a spoon. It's more like a ladle, somewhat more like a bowl, but it has a handle on it. So that's why probably, the translations are going to write the word spoon, because it looks a little bit like a spoon, but, the actual receptacle itself is big. How big is it? It's funny you should ask. We're going to be discussing that in the course of today's daf. And also the machta is going to be the shovel. The shovel, which we're going to clarify exactly what we mean by that in the Mishnah. So stay tuned in a moment. We're going to clarify exactly what we mean by the shovel. Chafan melo chafnav, menasan leso chakaf. So now what he's going to do is a chafina. Now it's very possible that if this is your first time through the Masechta, you don't know what the word chafina is. Chafina is a really unusual word. Chafina is basically where he's going to cup his hands in order to take the Ketores. The Torah's description of the Ketores is melo chafnav. It's got to be a handful, but when I say a handful, I really mean two hands. In tomorrow's daf, we're going to go into much greater detail. What is exactly the precise movement that's used by the Kohen Gadol when he's going to be cupping and collecting the Ketores? But it's going to be now, basically, I know this is an audio presentation, but for anyone who's here and who's watching me, basically what he's going to do is he's going to receive his hands, cupping them together, and and that's the amount of Ketores that he's going to be using. So, chafan malo chafna v'nas l'so chakaf. And now what he's going to do is he's going to put it in the spoon. Obviously, the receptacle of the spoon is going to be large enough in order for it to be able to hold that much Ketores. Now, how much are we talking about? Well, it really depends, obviously, now on the coin. If it's a large coin, it's going to be a lot of Ketores. If it's a small coin with small hands, it's going to be a small amount of Ketores. So that means to say that this shear over here is not an objective shear, but it's a subjective shear. It's just simply dependent on the size of the coin. Now, the Mishnah does say something which is a little bit confusing. The Mishnah says, V'kachaysa midasa, and that's the midah. What does the Mishnah mean by that? Stay tuned. That's coming up in today's daf. And now he's ready to walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And he's going to be holding the shovel in the right hand and the spoon in the left hand. The shovel in the right hand is where he's holding the coals, right? Remember, we described him going to the top of the Mizbeach in order to collect those coals. So those glowing hot coals are going to be held in the shovel in the right hand. And the Ketores, the spoonful of Ketores, is going to be held in his left hand. So this is going to be one of those most unusual events in the Beis HaMikdash where an avoda is going to be done with his left hand. Typically speaking, avoda must be performed with the right hand, and here he's going to be using it with the left hand. Now, admittedly, it plays a really small role in that the left hand is just going to be used in terms of transporting the spoon of Ketores into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but here we have one of those really anomalous events where he's using his left hand in order to do the avoda. Okay, so there are a lot of points that need clarification, as we just ran through the Mishnah. The Gemara seeks to clarify a number of the points that we just learned together. So, machta tanale. So first of all, we're talking about a shovel, right? They take out the shovel for him. Take out the shovel for him, right? If you've been following along up until this point in time, the shovel's already been taken out. In the previous parak, we already described how the shovel's taken out, and he went to the top of the Mizbeach in order to collect the coals. So at this point in time in the Mishnah is describing, oh, they took out a shovel for him? Now, what do you mean they took out a shovel for him? He already has the shovel. So what's our Mishnah talking about? So, and the Gemara simply quotes the Mishnah that we saw a little bit earlier. Daf Mem Gimel. So Natal Samachta V'Alo L'Rosh HaMizbeach V'Chot V'Yoreid. He went to the top of the Mizbeach already, and he already shoveled. He took in on the shovel a shovel's worth of coal. So what does it mean? You're taking the shovel out for him. All right, our Mishnahs over here are working sequentially. So we already have the shovel. So the Gemara says How Samachta D'Gachalam V'Achamachta D'Ketores. So it's very simple. Previously, we were talking about the shovel for the coals. The shovel that we're describing right now, that's for the Ketores. D'tanya, we learned in a brisa. It's the olo kafre kai melishkas akelim umachte gedusha shel Ketores melishkas beis avtinas. Ah, in other words, as we described already back in the Mishnah, in our Mishnah today, he's going to be cupping his hands in order to collect the Ketores. Where is he collecting the Ketores from? Ah, so now we understand the shovel of our Mishnah. The shovel of our Mishnah is not for the coals. That was already collected. The shovel for, full of coals, that's in the fourth parak. Here in the fifth parak, what are we describing? The shovel that was used, that was brought into the Beis Avtinas. You remember the family of Avtinas who were responsible for compounding the Ketores. So a shovel full of the Ketores was taken, an empty shovel was taken into the Beis Avtinas, which was adjacent to the Azara, and there, Ketores is put into that shovel. A lot of Ketores, actually. Remember that how much Ketores is made annually? So 368 mana of Ketores is made annually. Right? Yeah, my numbers are good. 368 mana were made. And for Yom Kippur, 3 mana were prepared for Yom Kippur. Now the Kohen Gadol doesn't need the 3 mana, but in other words, obviously you make enough Ketores so that when the Kohen Gadol inserts his hands, he's going to have enough in his cupped hands. It's going to be obviously much less than the 3 mana that's prepared. And what happens to all the excess Ketores? So hopefully you remember, we discussed it already earlier in our Masechta. Basically, it's recycled for the next year, but the process is a little bit complicated because we know that if we're going to recycle it for the next year, we have to repurchase it with next year's Machzis HaShekel. Okay, if you understood that, great. That particular point, if not, so it's something that we discussed already a couple of times. So effectively now the shovel of our Mishnah is the shovel that's brought into the Beis Haftiras in order to bring out the Ketores for the Kohen Gadol. And now what he's going to do is he's going to do a chafina on that shovel, he's going to transfer it over to the spoon, and now he's going to walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Good. So the continuing now in the Gemara, we're at the two dots towards the top of the Amud, Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, Chafa and Malo Chaf Navinos and Lesocha Kaf. So Kappa Yama Kippurim Lamali. The Gemara wants to know, you know, this spoon, right? The idea that he's going to be transferring the Ketores from his cupped hands into the spoon, like, I don't understand that, says the Gemara. Right? Read the Parsha, Vachrei Mos, and go step by step through the process. There's nowhere in the Pesukim that it says that you bring the Ketores in using a spoon. The Torah's description is that you bring the Ketores into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with cupped hands. So what's the purpose of the spoon? So Lamali, that's exactly the Gemara's question. Malochaf Navevi. Read the Pesukim in the Torah. The Gemara over here quotes a very short excerpt of the Pasuk. And that is that you just simply bring in the Malochaf Nav, cupped hands of Ketores. So Amar Achmana. So the Gemara says, Mishum Delo Afshar. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know what? Here's what we figured out. I say we, meaning, right, the Balei HaMasorah. So here's what we figured out. And that is that you need the spoon. There's just simply no way to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim not using the spoon. You have to use the spoon. And the Gemara is going to now go through the thought process of why it is that you absolutely need the spoon. Because the Hechinah V'Nayo V'Hadonayo. So the Gemara says, because what are you going to do? So you'll bring the shovel full of coals into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay, and then you'll go back. And then you'll cup your hands in order to take the Ketores. And then you'll go back in again. And that means that you're going to have to go in and out two times. The Gemara says, you can't do that. So Hava Achas Amar Rechman of Loshtei Havaos. Going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim has to be done in one Hava'ah. And so over here, good. So we are bound by the limits of only being, the Kohen Gadol only being able to go in one time. Okay, so he can only go in one time. So that means to say that he has to be holding the shovel of coal, the shovel full of coals, and he has to be holding the Ketores and go in one opportunity. And Nishkal el Ketores bechofna v'nachte lamachta ala v'le'ul. So the Gemara says, okay, so here's a suggestion, and that is to cup your hands in order to take the Ketores. Now his hands are full. In other words, and obviously he has to keep his hands together. And now what? So now he's got the shovel full of coal. So I got an idea. And again, if you're watching me, that's great because it's a little bit helpful over here if you have a visualization. And somebody else will come along and balance the shovel of coals over his arms. Okay? And now he's going to go in like that. And that is maybe how we can dispense with the spoon. But the Gemara says, but I'll tell you what, that's going to be problematic. And what the Gemara is about to say, as long as I'm acting it out over here, so what Gemara is about to say is, now he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, now what? So now it's going to be a bit tricky, because he's got the shovel full of coals right resting on his arms, his cupped hands of the Ketores. Now what eventually is going to happen is that he's got to put the Ketores down on the coals, but right now the coals are in his arm. So maybe what he'll do, this is going to be really tricky, is he's going to bring his arms up to his mouth, and basically with his teeth, he's going to hold the shovel with his teeth, and then somehow place the shovel down on the ground and now put the Ketores on top of the coals. The Gemara is going to say it's not an appropriate way to handle it. Meaning the Gemara doesn't say this, but I'll say it. He kind of looks like a clown. Like it looks like a circus clown, right? That he's doing it in that manner. Okay? And that's what, so Nashkele leKetores bechofna v'nachta lamachta Allah v'le'ol. So the Gemara says, okay, kimati asam, good. I know I just spelled it out, but the Gemara now, I'm reading inside the Gemara. So the Gemara says, when he gets there, hechi le'avi, what is he going to do? Nishkale b'shineha, you're going to take the shovel with your teeth, v'nachte lamachta, put it down on the ground, hashel lefnei melech basav adam, ein osin king, you wouldn't do that in front of a king. Lefnei melech machi amlechem HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'achas kama v'chama, so you're not going to do that in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so, hilkach lo efshar. So to bring in the coals and the Ketores, all with one entrance, with one opportunity to walk in, so there's no other way to do it. So that's why the Ketores has to be placed into a spoon, so that way all the Ketores can be held in one hand, meaning the Ketores, which is in a spoon, is going to be held in one hand, notably the left hand, and the shovel full of coals is going to be held in the right hand. And since there's no other way to do it, so this is not unprecedented. We do have a precedent of holding the Ketores in a spoon and only by the Nesiim. Parshas Naso, right? If you were paying attention last Shabbos to the Kriyas Torah, and if you're paying attention in Chanukah, so you know that we read Parshas Naso. We read Parshas Naso a week ago. We read it on Chanukah, and we know that each of the Nesiim are bringing their carbon as part of the inauguration of the Mishkan, right? Through days 1 through 12 of Nisan. So each one of the Nesiim brought in a gift. Now, it happens to be that each one of them brought exactly the same thing in, and good, and you hear a lot of lovely drushes in terms of what the lessons are to be learned, but nevertheless, the only point that we're focusing on right now is the idea that the Ketores, which is brought by the Nesiim, so where is that Ketores being held? In a kaf, in a spoon. Again, I say spoon, it's more like a ladle, but in a spoon. So it's not unprecedented, so we're going to take that, and we're going to borrow that idea for the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, because there's no other way to do it. Natos hamachta b'yamin v'esakaf b'smol. Shovel's going to go in the right hand, and the Ketores is going to go in the left hand, and hopefully at this point in time, you already anticipated the Gemara's question, and that is that if we're going to go in this way, which we are, so why are we electing to put the shovel of coals in the right hand? Obviously, the right hand is where the primary avodah is normally done. I'll say it even stronger. The avodah can only be done with the right hand. And here we have an exceptional moment where some avodah is going to be done with the left hand. But if anything, put the Ketores in the right hand. Put the shovel full of coal in the left hand. That would seem to make a lot more sense. And meanwhile, the Mishnah says the coals go in the right, Ketores goes in the left. What's going on over here? The Gemara has a great phrase to express this question. Yitziva bara v'giyur b'shmei Shemaya. So let's get this straight. So the residents of the country, so you're going to put them on the ground. Our aliens, illegal immigrants, if you will. So what are you going to do? You're going to put them in an elevated state, in an elevated spot. Meaning it's not how the world works. The way the world works is that the residents of the country are typically put on a higher ground. I don't mean that from an elevation standpoint, but in other words, they have more rights and privileges than people who are visiting strangers, right? Aliens, if you will. So the Gemara says, so you're taking the Ketores, you're putting it in the left hand. Obviously, the Ketores has more prominence. The coals are just simply a means of burning the Ketores. But obviously, the Ketores has more significance and more import. And why in the world are we putting the Ketores in the left hand, the Kohen Gadol, why not the right? So Zumaruba Vizumuetis. So answers the Gemara, well, the coals are just simply heavier. Meaning we have to take into consideration the pragmatics. Pragmatically speaking, the coals are heavier, so that's why the Kohen Gadol is allowed to hold in his right hand. The Ketores is not as heavy. So the Gemara says, and even if, let's say, you happen to have a humongous Kohen Gadol, and when he does his cupped hands of Ketores, it comes out to even be as much as the coals, but still, Zuchama Vizutzonenis. One is really hot and one is not hot, meaning the coals are hot. And so when you're handling the coals, it's dangerous. And so therefore, once again, allowance is given to the Kohen Gadol to hold in his right hand because typically it's heavier. And even if it's not heavier, but it's hotter and you want the Kohen Gadol to be in a very comfortable, secure position when holding the coals. And that's why he's going to be holding it in his right hand. Okay. So basically the Gemara's answer is, pragmatically speaking, the coals are held in the right hand. It is typically heavier. It is always going to be hotter. And so therefore, put it in the Kohen Gadol's right hand. It's an issue of pragmatics. Okay. We mentioned that there was this huge Kohen Gadol by the name of Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis. And so now the Gemara is going to really treat us for nearly a half an Amud about some stories about this particular Kohen Gadol. Okay, he was very special. He lived during the second Beis HaMikdash. And typically speaking, those two sentences don't go together. Because typically speaking, we talk about the Kohen Gadol during the second Beis HaMikdash. And what do we know? We learned back on Daf Tes in the Masechta. There were a lot of Kohen Gadol's second base. The Mikdash, typically they lasted a year if they were lucky. Right? Over 300 Kohen Gadol's that operated during the second base of Mikdash, and it was one disaster after another disaster. Usually the position was paid for by family members, by the Kohen Gadol himself. Okay, so typically we do not praise and allow the Kohen Gadol the second base of Mikdash, but okay, but here we have a circumstance in which we are directing praise to a Kohen Gadol. So with that stated, so the Gemara over here is going to be describing Rabbi Yishmael ben Kimchis. And famously, in just a moment, we're also going to talk about his mother. Okay, good. So the Gemara treats us. So the Gemara is going to give us three successive stories regarding Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis. Here's number one. Amar lav Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis haya chofin arba kaven b'mlo chafnav v'amar kolahan. I'm sorry, before we get to the Ve'omer. So he would do a chafina. He would cup his hands in order to take the keteres. How much keteres did his two hands hold in a cupped fashion? So the answer is arba kaven, four kaven. Okay, I'd like to impress you and tell you how much that translates to into our measurements, into volume that we're familiar with. So I happen not to, I don't know, I can't even give you an estimate right now. But suffice to say, it's a lot, right? It is much greater than the average. I'd really impress you if I told you how many standard deviations we are away from the average, but I don't know the answer to that either. I don't have the stats for you, right? On the card of Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis, so his stats would be fantastic. I just right now, right? I can't entertain you with the actual stats. But anyway, suffice to say, he was an extraordinarily large man, and the Malo Chafnav came out to four kabin, which is a lot. Now all the other mothers are wonderful. They are zradim, a word we're going to explain in just a moment. My mother is alalagag, right? She was to the roof. Right, an expression, by the way, that we have in our language. But okay, it's an old expression, right, to the roof. Right? My mother Zered, oh my gosh, it was literally the top. So Ikadarmi, now what does that mean? That everyone else's mother is a Zered and my mother Zered is to the top? What's a Zered? So the Gemara is going to give two possible explanations. Ikadarmi Barsan. So the Gemara says we're talking about prenatal care. I know this is amazing, but okay, good. So we're talking about prenatal care. So the arson is really good for the chola. So what is arson? So basically, we're talking about right. I'm not giving a precise definition, but you know, steel cut oats, right? Kind of grain, right? Probably oats. I'm not sure which grain it is. That was cut really well. Basically oatmeal, right? But special oatmeal. And pregnant mothers who needed extra care. Rashi writes this. I'm paraphrasing Rashi right now. I'm not reading the Rashi inside, but this is just a quick summary of Rashi. So mothers who are pregnant and need care for themselves and for their and for the fetus. So they have a very specific diet, and that diet included oatmeal, but oatmeal that was cut in a very specific way. And so over here, he's describing that his mother experienced tremendous prenatal care, and that is what afforded him the opportunity of being so good. So basically, so one way he describes how it is that he grew to be so big and so large is that his mother's prenatal care was exceptional. The Gemara gives another explanation of what the word Zered means, meaning what exactly was it that caused him to be so big, and that was a genetic selection. I know I'm using modern words to describe it, but okay. So genetic selection. Uchid Rabbi Abau, the Rabbi Abau, Rabbi Ksiv. Now, by David HaMelech, we also describe this genetic selection. And that is, V'tazreni chayo l'mechama, uksiv ha-ma'azreni chayo l'mechama. David HaMelech is describing now his own genetic selection and how it was that he was tazreni and mi'azreni. Not exactly the same word. And the Gemara goes on to explain. Now, I know what happened. We were talking about Yishmael Kohen Gadol, and now we move to David HaMelech, but it's the same idea. And that is, Amar David Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Zirisani, V'zei Rastani. So David HaMelech describes, how is it that he became so strong, and he really, in terms of his physical development, was extraordinarily developed. So Zirisani comes from the word Zorah. You remember Masechta Shabbos, we talked about the various malachas. What's Zorah? So that's winnowing. And that means to say as follows, obviously, right? The Gemara understood this, right? Maybe not to the great detail that we do, but it doesn't matter. The Gemara understood that although reproduction occurs with an egg and a sperm, but there is a number of sperm that go in, and only one of the sperm is going to find the egg in order to start the formation of a fetus, right? And which sperm is it going to be? So it happens to be biologically, it is going to be one of the stronger sperm, but what we're basically describing over here is Zorah, meaning what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is he winnows through all the sperm in order to select the strongest sperm in order to match with the egg, in order to start the embryo. And so Zeresani Vizeras Tani. So by doing Zora, by winnowing, so that is how it is that I became as large as I became. That is a description of David HaMelech. And the Gemara is saying that the same thing is true regarding Rabbi Shmuel, meaning that it's because of the genetic selection. And when I say genetic selection, right, meaning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure that the strongest and the best of the sperm made up with the egg in order to create the embryo. So that is going to be another explanation of the word Zered. So in terms of Rabbi Shmuel's massive size, so he attributes it to his mother Zered. What does that mean? The Gemara just gave us two explanations. Either it's the prenatal care that the mother did, meaning her diet, or number two, it's going to be the sperm that that ended up impregnating the egg in order to create the embryo. Okay. That's story number one. Story number two. Amar lav Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis, pamacha sipar devarim im haravi echad b'shuk. One time, Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis was having a conversation with an Arab in the marketplace. And what happens is that while they were talking, some spit went from the Arab onto the clothing of Rabbi Shmuel. And what happens now is that he becomes disqualified. Because that we know that the spit of an Amma Aretz is metame begadav. It makes you tame. And so now with that spit on his clothing, so now he came into contact with Tuma, and so he could no longer serve. His brother now filled in, his brother Yeshevav, Vishimish Tachtav, Virasa Iman Shnei Kohanim Gadolim, B'yom Echad. His mother now was privileged to see her two of her sons become Kohen Gadol on the same day. By the way, what day was that? So Rashi over here writes unequivocally, it's talking about on Yom Kippur. Okay, now, this part of the story, with that Rashi, this part of the story is really strange. In that, on Yom Kippur now, so when on Yom Kippur are we talking about? That he's in the marketplace and he's talking to an Arab? So, I'm gonna joke, but I'm only gonna be half joking. Right, he's going out during the break. Now, I don't know what that means, by the way. Their Yom Kippur wasn't our Yom Kippur. Meaning, we're in Shul and they were in the Beis HaMikdash doing the Avodah. So it's not exactly the same. So I don't really know. Well, you're going to be honest with everyone. I don't really know when he's in the marketplace and speaking to an Arab in Yom Kippur. And being that he's a Kohen Gadol, who's right now currently involved in doing the Avodah of Yom Kippurim, it doesn't seem to be very prudent that he's out there and he's talking. And so what I'll tell you, and I say this all the time, is that we're not given all the details, meaning there must have been a good reason why he went down and spoke to this Arab, right? It wasn't frivolous. So just the Gemara over here is only giving us a limited number of details, and so there must have been a reason why he was outside, and we're not privy to those details. Regardless, so it's an opportunity to just highlight that the mother of Rabbi Shmuel, Kimchis, was able to see two of her sons serving in the Beis HaMikdash on the very same day. We are now up to our third story. And again over here, he's speaking to one of his, I'm sorry, Sipra im Adon Echad Vashuk. I'm even wearing my glasses and still, okay. So anyway, so he's speaking to an Adon. And Yosef Echad Gadolim. So this third story over here is almost identical to the second story. It's just that who is he conversing with? He's conversing with an Adon. Okay, I can't help you over there. Okay, he was conversing with somebody who basically spit on him. Again, not intentionally. In other words, while they were talking, just happens to be that, you know, he's a wet talker, right? A lot, he expectorates a lot and good. And so some of his spit landed on his clothing. And another son, Yosef, goes ahead now, is Mishamish Tachtav. Now that he becomes disqualified, so one of his brothers is Mishamish Tachtav. And again, Kimchis was able to enjoy having two of her sons serving in the Beis HaMikdash on the same day. Once again, over here in this third story, which is nearly identical to the second, so the Rishonim are bothered, meaning that in story number two, Yeshevav, the brother, went ahead and served in the Beis HaMikdash. And here in the story, so a different brother, Yosef, goes ahead and replaces Rabbi Shmuel. So why isn't the same replacement? Why isn't Yeshevav replacing? Good. The Rishonim are bothered by that question. Tosus Arid, I believe, is the one who offers an answer. But anyway, we're going to go on. Tanu Rabbanan Shiva Banim Hayulah LeKimchis VeKulan Shimshu BeKuna Gedola. So Kimchis had seven sons, and they all served as Kohen Gadol. So we were treated, in the course of the three stories that we just went through, so we were treated to how three of the sons served as the Kohen Gadol, but basically without giving any more detail. So we now know that four of the other sons at one point in time also served as the Kohen Gadol. Now again, this is during the second Beis Hamikdash, so, you know, in other words, it's a bracha, but, you know, in other words, you gotta be careful for what you wish for. All right, we know, as I pointed out earlier, so during the second Beis Hamikdash, so, you know, all the Kohen Gadols, generally speaking, lasted a year. Okay, so, but regardless, however, in other words, if you have seven sons and they're all serving as Kohen Gadol, so you're doing something right. So what is Kimchis? What's the mother doing right? So the Gemara actually tells us what she did right. So Amru Lechacham and Ma'asisha Zachis Lekach. So the Gemara wants to know, what's her secret? Right, that she had such success with her children. So Amr Lahem Miyamilo Rao Koros Basi Kalai Sa'arai. So the Gemara says, in other words, she's reporting exactly what it is, and that is that the walls of my house never saw my hair. So Amrulay Harbi also came below Ho'ilu. And so they said, okay, in other words, that's unbelievable in terms of tznius. But you're not alone in this. Others tried it as well and then get the kind of success you got. So the Gemara says, good. So she accepted upon herself a particular chumrah, and the Chachamim noted, okay, that's an explanation, but it's not, but it's an incomplete explanation. There's got to be something else as well. Good. Okay. This story regarding Kimchis and her advanced level of tznius, where not only does she cover her hair while she goes outside the house, but she covers her hair even while inside the house. So obviously this is much discussed in the halacha in terms of a woman's requirement, a married woman's requirement to cover her hair. So is a woman required to cover her hair while she's in the privacy of her own home? So the answer, of course, is no, she's not required. Kimchis took upon herself a chumrah. So when a person attains a certain level where they're ready to accept such chumras, that's great. But meikar din, according to the baseline halacha, there's no requirement to cover the hair when you're in the privacy of your own home. But when you're ready to take on this chumrah, like Kimchis does, that's great. That's advanced levels of tznius. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara. So we just were treated to three stories. No. She gave an incomplete answer, and nobody on the page completes the answer. You don't think I'd like to know exactly what it is as well? I'd love to know. We're given incomplete information. Okay, so the Tana Rabbanan. We are now towards the bottom of the Amud, about 8-9 lines from the very bottom, beginning of the line. So after being now treated to phenomenal stories regarding Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis, and we spoke a little bit about the mother, so the Gemara now goes back to Halacha. The remainder of today's daf is going to be the Halachic portion. So, Bekumsao, Shelo Yaseh Mida L'Kometz. Now let's keep everything nice and clear and organized. We're talking about the kmitza over here, which is by standard mincha. So by standard mincha, what a Kohen's going to do, it doesn't have to be the Kohen Gadol, right? Any Kohen can do the avod of kometz, is he's going to take his hand and he's going to put it into the flour in order to take a fistful of flour. That's what's called a kometz. And over here in the Braisa, so the Braisa makes it really clear that this is a subjective measurement based on the fist of the Kohen. Now, in a moment, we're going to be very clear about it. Tomorrow's daf is going to be the Gemara really trying to clarify exactly how kometz is done, exactly how the Maloch Hafnaf is done. It's going to be a little bit tricky, by the way. Tomorrow's daf is really a visual daf, and we, of course, don't have pictures connected with the Gemara. I'm sure someone went through the trouble of trying to draw pictures, but it would be really helpful tomorrow as a visual medium, not as an audio medium, but nevertheless. The basic idea, if you can look over here, right? Oh yeah, you can see it on the Zoom as well. That's phenomenal. So the basic idea is that you're going to be taking your three middle fingers and you're cupping them over your hands as far down as they go, and you're going to be creating obviously a pocket within those fingers, and the kometz now is going to go into that pocket. You're keeping your thumb out, you're keeping your pinky out, and so whatever's collected now inside of the three cupped fingers, so that's what's going to be a kometz. Now again, just make sure we all have it organized. The kometz is done for a standard mincha. On Yom Kippur, we're doing something that is special and unique to the Kohen Gadol, and that's Maloch Hafnav, that's the cupped hands. So the Gemara is going to be going back and forth between Kemitza and Maloch Hafnav. Just everyone please make sure that we have it straight in terms of what we're discussing. Right now we're discussing the Kometz. So Tana Rabbanan Bekum Social, Yaseh Midah Kometz. Don't make a measuring cup for the Kometz, because it's not objective, it's subjective. It totally depends on the size of the hand of the Kohen. So Ibalu Mash Yaseh Midah L'Chafina. So what about for the chafina? Can we make a measuring cup for the chafina? Now, we already have the benefit of having learned our Mishnah, and we kind of already know the answer, and that would seem to be that no, but the Gemara wants to know that textually speaking, it's not as clear with the chafina as it is with the comments. And the Gemara makes this point right now. So when the Torah describes comets, it says kumtso, relative to the Kohen, his comets. So it's a subjective measurement. But the Torah does not say, by the chafina, a chafnav, ela melo chafnav. It's a cup full of the Ketores. A cupped handful of the Ketores. But it doesn't say it in the possessive like it says it regarding the comets. So that's one point. So I'm sorry, Malo Chafnav Ketoret Samim Daka. Lo. And therefore, maybe it's not subjective. Oh, Dilma, Yalef Malo Malo, Mikum So. Or maybe no. The Torah has the word Malo by comets. The Torah has the word Malo by the Chafina. And so maybe we have a Gzera Shava linking the two. And just like by the Komets, it's a subjective measurement, maybe the same thing would be true regarding the Chafina. It's a subjective measurement. So Tashma V'kachay Samidasa. So the Gemara says, well, I think I know the answer. Well, let's go back to our Mishnah. Now our Mishnah says, right, we just quoted three words over here, but the Mishnah says, HaGadol Lefi Gadlo, V'haKatan Lefi Katno, V'kachay Samidasa. So as we read the Mishnah, I pointed out that's a strange expression. What does that mean? And that's what our Gemara over here wants to investigate. What does that mean? V'kachaysa midasa. So my love, she imratza lasos mida. We're skipping the word acheres. She imratza lasos mida osa. Maybe what the Mishnah means is that if you want to make a measuring cup for the melo chafna, for the chafina, maybe you make a measuring cup. Isn't that what the Mishnah means? The Gemara says, no, that's not what the Mishnah means. Lo. Hachi kamar. V'kach haya chozer v'chofna lifnim. No, what the Mishnah means is that after the Kohen Gadol does the chafina and then transfers over to the kaf, to the spoon, then what's going to happen is he's going to bring the spoon into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then he's going to do chafina again, transferring the Ketores from the spoon into his hands, and then he's going to go ahead and distribute the Ketores over the coals. That's what the Mishnah means. V'kachay samidasa. So, shamas mina chofen v'chozer v'chofen. The Gemara says, really? So what you're really doing is you're dipping your foot into a debate, which we're going to see a couple days from now. Meaning, is this extra step required? The Kohen Gadol did the chafina, then transferred over to the spoon. Does he then have to transfer it back into his hands before laying it down in the Ketores? So this is going to be a debate that we're going to see a couple days from now. And now you really want to tell me that we have clarity on this issue? So the Gemara is saying, I'm telling you that we don't have clarity on this issue. It's going to be a subject to a debate later on. So Dilma Shimratza Lasos Mida Osa. So the Gemara says, well, okay. So maybe what the Mishnah means, V'kach Haisa Midasa, is that the Mishnah means that if he wants to make a measuring cup, he may do so. Not that he's required to make a measuring cup, but he may do so if he would like to. That's possibly what the Mishnah means. Inami, shelo yechzer v'shelo yosir. Or maybe what the Mishnah means is that it's got to be exactly a cupped hand's worth of Ketores, no less and no more. That's what the Mishnah could mean. So once again, the Mishnah over here does not necessarily mean that you have to make a measuring cup. In fact, you could interpret the Mishnah to mean that you don't make a measuring cup, and you'll just give different interpretations of what it means. V'kach haisa midasa. Okay, so on the question of, is a measuring cup used for the melo chafnav? So the Gemara vacillates on this issue. When it comes to the comets, there's no vacillation. The Gemara is very clear. There is no measuring cup for the comets. It has to be a fistful of the coin. When it comes to the melo chafnav, right, maybe. Maybe you can make an argument, but it sounds like from the Gemara that this also is subjective. And the simple reading of the Mishnah, by the way, is that it's subjective, right? Hagadol lefi gadlo, v'akat lefi katno. Okay. Ten rabbanim alokim so yachol mivurats. Now we're back to the kmitza. Again, remember, we got to keep it clear whether we're talking about the kmitza or we're talking about the melo chafnav. We're talking about the kmitza of a standard mincha. So I might have thought mivurats, make it heaping. So tamalam, right? Bikum so. So the Torah says comets. Meaning it's got to be specifically a fistful. Well, maybe it's just the fingertips. Meaning, and again, if you're watching, so you're taking your fingers and you're cupping it over your palm. What the Gemara is suggesting over here is that maybe, I don't know, you just basically wrap your fingers around themselves. And I can't even see a space in my fingers at this point in time. But maybe that's how much comets you should take. So tamalamar malo kumso. Kidakamtsa imchi. It's got to be a full comets like people do. It's funny, like people do. I mean, right? I don't know what other circumstances you do a kometz, but basically, it's taking your fingers and putting it all the way over your palms, and that pocket created, that's what we're describing over here. Haketzer chofesh shlosh etzbos av apisis yad of a kometz. So like I've been describing, but here the Gemara actually says it. And that is, you're taking your three fingers and you're putting it over your palm. Uvamachmas v'mecheshes mochek begodlo milamalo v'etzba'o ketana milamata v'zuhi avodakasha shebe mikdash. And then as we turn to the Amud Beis, the Gemara describes over here, you know, by certain menachos, specifically the machvas and the marcheshes. Now, by the machvas and by the marcheshes, so these minchas are fried, and then you do the kemitza post-frying. You fry them up, you break them up into pieces, and then you do the kometz. Now, if we're talking about doing kometz with a mincha that's just flour and oil, it's pretty simple. In other words, you're talking about just ground flour and oil. So you put your hand in, and you're going to take out a kometz, and whatever's sticking out the sides are just going to fall away. But when it comes to the machvas and comes to the marcheshes, so you're talking about where it's already fried and broken up into pieces, and now you do the kometz, what's going to end up happening is that you're going to have pieces sticking out. But you want specifically a kometz. So what you have to do, what the Kohen has to do now, is that he's going to take his thumb and he's going to basically level off on one side. He's going to take his pinky and he's going to level off on the other side. He needs a strong thumb, and what's going to be even harder is that he needs a strong pinky. And so for these particular menachos, this is going to require a lot of dexterity. And the Gemara notes, it's a really difficult avoda. Okay, so when you're the Kohen, so chalk this up as the most difficult avoda. And the Gemara over here is going to push back a little bit. This is the most difficult avoda? The Gemara says, I got news for you. There are other difficult avodas. Zuhi avoda kasha shemekdash. Zuhi vesulo. There's no more difficult avoda in the base of Mekdash. Vahaika malika, vahaika chafina. There is a malika, there is a chafina, malika. The insertion of the thumbnail of the Kohen into the back of the neck of the bird, right? That's the shchitas chatas and shchitas ha'of that's done by the birds of the birds that are karbanos, and to insert your thumb into the back of the neck of the bird, that's difficult, right? I've never tried it. I'm sure it's very difficult. Chafina is going to be difficult as well. Now chafina is going to be difficult. So what's the difficult nature of the chafina, cupping your hands and taking out the keteres? So I'll ask you to wait just a couple of days in the daf. And we're going to be describing what exactly is going to be so difficult about the chafina. Stay tuned. That's going to come up in just a couple of days from now. So Ella Zuhi may have Otis Kasha Shabbat Mikdash. The Gemara says, okay. So we don't have to pick the hardest. It's one of the hardest. Meaning, basically now is that we have identified three avodas in the base of Mikdash, which are just simply not going to be easy. It's going to require skill and strength and dexterity. And good. So, to highlight now, three of the toughest avodas in the base of Mikdash. So one is going to be leveling off the kometz of a machvas and a marcheshes. Number two is going to be the malika sa'of. And number three is going to be the chafina, for reasons which we're going to articulate in just a couple days from now. Amar Rav Yochanan by Rabbi Yeshua ben Uzzah. Beina b'naim shomalokum somahu. Okay, once again, this is very helpful as a visual medium. Sorry for those who are just listening. So now you do the kometz. Again, we're back to kemitza. So you do the kometz, and what you're going to do now is you're cupping your fingers over your hand and collecting the flour in that pocket that's formed over there. Now, what's going to end up happening is that there's going to be some kernels, some granules of flour that's going to be caught between the fingers. So now when it comes to the kometz of a mincha, anything interior to your palms, that's going to be the kometz that's burned on the top of the mizbech. Everything else of the mincha is what's called shirayim. And by standard mincha, not all menachos, but by standard mincha, that's going to be eaten by the kohanim. So a clear demarcation of flour in the cupped hand, that's inside versus flour that's outside. Flour inside is kometz. Flour outside is shirayim. What about the granules that are stuck between the finger? What's going to be their status? So that's the Gemara's question. So, sorry. Beina binaim shomalokum somahu. Amara papa de gavai loti bailach divide kometzu. So anything that's interior of the palm, so that's kometzu. Un de brailoti bailach divide shiraimu. Anything outside of the fingers is for sure going to be shiraim. Kiti bailach de beini beini. We're talking about the granules stuck between the fingers. So my. Amara Yochanan hada pasha Yoshua ben Uzai. Beina binaim suffek ninhu. So the Gemara says, you know what it is? It's a suffek. Okay. It's a funny answer, meaning we already knew that before the question started. Meaning that was exactly the question. What's the status of them? They're not outside, they're not inside. They're between the fingers. The Gemara's answer over here that it's a suffix, right? That's an answer? That was the question. So what's the answer? There's a Ritva over here, right? I've spoken about this Ritva before. And Baruch Hashem, I'm not the only one who spoke about this Ritva. Many people have spoken about the Ritva before. So the Ritva over here comments that Suffolk over here means that it's both. It has both the status of Kometz and Shirayim. The Ritva famously writes, famously because I know it, the Ritva famously writes that it's like Bein HaShemashos, right? The Bein HaShemashos period, that's between day and night. So the Ritva says it's Suffolk. Suffolk, not in the general state of Suffolk, I don't know. Suffolk meaning it's both. Meaning, what is the Bein HaShemashos period? Is it day and it's night? The answer is yes. Yes. It's day and it's night. So over here, the granules of flour that are between the fingers, when the Gemara says it's Suffolk, it means, yeah, it's Kometz and a Shirayim. Now, how do you treat it? That's a wonderful question. The Gemara is going to ask that question now. So, Hechi Avid. So, Amar Rebbe Chanina. So, Makter Kometz L'chudei T'chila V'hadar Bein HaBinayim. So, the Gemara says, so here's what you're going to do. You're going to burn the Kometz followed by burning any flour that's stuck between the fingers. D'amar Bein HaBinayim B'reisha. Because let's try this in the reverse order. Let's first burn the Bein HaBinayim. So, the Gemara says, that's a really bad idea. Because D'mo Shirayim Nenu. Because, again, what is its status? So it's a hybrid. It's Kometz and a Shirayim. But if we're looking at the Shirayim element, so Havalu Shirayim Shechasru Bein Kemitza LaHaktara. V'amamar Shirayim Shechasru Bein Kemitza LaHaktara Ein Maktirin Alein Esa Kometz. So here the halacha is very clear. And that is that after the Kometz is done, but before it's burnt on the Mizbeach, if I lose any of the Shirayim, that inhibits my ability to offer the Kometz. In order to offer the Kometz and burn the Kometz on the top of the Mizbeach, you must have all the Shirayim intact. So if I took the Bein HaBinayim and I burnt it first, so now that's a chisaron in the Shirayim, and you can't burn the Kometz. And ihachi hashanami, ikrei kan kol shemimenu liishim, harehu beval taktiru. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. So what was our strategy? To first burn the Kometz and then burn the Bein HaBinayim. The Gemara says, okay, but anything that needs to go up onto the Eish, so Hareyu Beval Taktiru, meaning that that there's going to be a prohibition of burning the Shirayim if in fact it has this status of Shirayim. Meaning to say that if I burn the Kometz first, and then we take the Bein HaBinayim flour, and we burn that, but if it has the status of Shirayim, it's not allowed to be burnt on the top of the Mizbeach. So the Gemara says, basically, we don't have a good strategy of how to handle the Bein HaBinayim flour. So Amar Rav Yehuda Bereid, Rav Shimon ben Pazi, Demakter Leilu Shemeitzim. So the Gemara says, no, actually, we do have a way to handle it. And that is that you take the Bein HaBinayim, you throw up onto the Mizbeach, you burn it. If it's Shirayim, you're not allowed to burn it. So the Gemara says, no, don't burn it L'Shem Ketores, sorry. Don't burn it L'Shem Kometz, but rather burn it L'Shem Eitzim. Meaning, you can have alternative kavanas when you burn it on the top of the Mizbeach. Now, this is, I know it sounds strange, but this is the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer, D'Tanya, we learned in the Brisa, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, L'Reach Nichoch Yata, Ma'ala Aval Ata, Ma'ala L'Shem Eitzim. That what you could do is that you can't burn it L'Reach Nichoach, but you can burn it as Eitzim. And if you have the kavana of burning it for alternative reasons, i.e., you want it for fuel for the fire. Okay, flour doesn't burn that well, but regardless, it's got oil, it's saturated with oil. Okay, so you want to burn it and treat it like wood, you're allowed to do that. So basically what the Gemara now recommends is that the strategy over here is first burn the Kometz on the top of the Mizbeach, then take the flour that was caught between the fingers. Again, it has a hybrid status of being Kometz and Shirayim. And what you're going to do is you're going to burn it on top of the Mizbeach. It might be Shirayim. You can't burn Shirayim on the top of the Mizbeach. Yeah, you throw it up onto the Mizbeach with the Kavana of if it's not Kometz, then it is Shirayim. So we'll burn it. We'll burn it like Eitzim. And that you're allowed to do if you subscribe to the Sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. Now hear what I just said at the end. If I subscribe to Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara says, Hanichal l'Rabbi Eliezer. That's great. If you subscribe to Rabbi Eliezer. El Rabbanu Ma'ikal HaMeimar. But if you hold like the Chachamim, you can't do that. You can't just simply take this flour, put it up onto the Mizbeach with an alternate Kavana. You can't do that according to the Chachamim. So Amar Rav Mari de Kamtze Shmeini. So what we're going to do is that we're going to invite we'll invite fat kohanim to do the kemitza. So you have fat kohanim, so you have fat fingers. And now the fat fingers are really going to close off any gaps between the fingers. And so now if you have him doing the kemitza, so you won't get into this problem altogether. Gemara's conclusion over here, unbelievably strange, that when doing the kometz in the Beis HaMikdash, So we're going to try and look for fat Kohanim with fat fingers? It's strange. It's a strange conclusion of the Gemara, but you understand. We all understand how the Gemara arrived at that conclusion, because the flower that's caught between the fingers, so it's got this hybrid status of being Kometz and being Shirayim, and to burn on the Mizbech presents a halachic dilemma. Okay. We'll stop over here to write the two dots tomorrow. We'll pick up the two dots. Exceedingly short daf tomorrow. So we'll stop here. Okay, let's quickly recap our daf today. We started the fifth parak of the Masechta, and we talked about the Kohen Gadol getting ready with his spoonful of Ketores and his shovelful of glowing hot coals in order so that he can walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. In the Mishnah, so we talked about the shovel that's taken out, not the shovel for the coals, as we clarified in the Gemara, but rather the shovel that's taken to the Beis Avtinas, where a full shovelful of the Ketores a shovelful of the Ketores is put onto that shovel, and now the Kohen Gadol is going to cup his hands in order to take out a Moloch Chafnav of the Ketores in order for him to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now what he's going to do is that the Kohen Gadol is going to transfer it over into a spoon and walking in with the spoon. Why? Why the spoon? Because remember, he's also got to walk in with the shovel full of coals as well. Now he's holding two items and he can only walk in one time. So as the Gemara went through the thought process, there's just simply no other way to do it. Meaning even though the Torah doesn't describe the usage of a spoon, but we have to be using a spoon, otherwise there's no way he can hold both items and go into the Kodesh HaKadosh with those two items. The Gemara was bothered by the fact that the spoon's in the left hand, the coals are in the right hand, and it seems to be reverse, meaning we should put the Ketores in the right hand. The Ketores is the more important piece of equipment over here going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Gemara acknowledges, yeah, that's a great point, but also you have to be pragmatic. The coals are going to be heavier, the coals are going to be hotter, and so you have to be pragmatic about it. That's why it's going to the coals are going to go in the right hand, and the Ketores is going to go into the left hand. The Gemara says that the Meloch Chafnav is a subjective measurement, depending on the size of the hands of the Kohen Gadol. Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis, who was a Kohen Gadol during Bais Sheni, so his cupped hands of Ketores were able to hold four kab. And the Gemara on the Amud Aleph went through three episodes with Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis in terms of his greatness, physically, spiritually, in terms of his greatness. The mother also, the Gemara spent some time describing this morning, where she was privileged to have seven sons, each one of them serving in the Beis Mikdash as a Kohen Gadol. Why was she Zocher? So the Gemara gave an incomplete answer. The Gemara says that she had extra levels of tznius, that she practiced. Okay, good. So, as the Gemara pointed out, it's an incomplete answer because other people did that as well. She had other secrets that the Gemara did not divulge. The Gemara then goes on to describe on the bottom of the Amud Aleph that the Kometz is a subjective measurement. When the Kohen does a Kometz on a standard mincha, so it's going to be a subjective measurement based on the size of the hand of the Kohen. How about the Chafina done by Yom Kippur? Is that a subjective measurement as well? The Gemara vacillated a little bit on that topic, but it seems like from the Gemara's conclusion that it too is going to be a subjective measurement, and that really is a simple reading of our Mishnah. Doing the Kometz and leveling off with the thumb and the finger, especially when you're talking about the Kometz that's fried and broken up into pieces, so that's really hard leveling off with your thumb and your finger. And the Gemara in the Amud Beis highlighted that there were three avodas that were done by a Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash that required a lot of physical strength and a lot of coordination. And the three avodas are the leveling off the Kometz of Machvas Marcheshes, the Chafina of Yom Kippur. Again, why that's so difficult, stay tuned. We're going to describe that a little bit for now. And also Malika, the insertion of the thumbnail into the back of the neck of a bird. Okay, those are the three of the toughest jobs of the Kohen Gadol. Kohanim in general. When a Kohen does Kemitza, so there are going to be granules of flour stuck between the fingers. Does that have the status of Kometz, and does that have the status of Shirayim? Gemara says Suffolk, we don't know. And so therefore it leads to problems in which, are we going to burn it on the Mizbech? Well, if it's Shirayim, you're not allowed to burn Shirayim on the Mizbech. And if we burn it first, and it's Shirayim, so that means you're depleted from Shirayim. You have a Chisaron in the Shirayim. You can't even offer the Kometz. So you got to first burn the Kometz and then burn the flour that's stuck between the fingers. Although that is not a perfect solution, it works, but it only works according to Rabbi Eliezer. It doesn't work according to the Chachamim. The Gemara ends off the daf by advocating that really, if you get a large Kohen with fat fingers, so you won't ever get to this problem.